You're listening to Bison Report Radio, presented by 24/7 Sports.
You guys have done a great job for Bison Nation throughout the years here. Great to be on with you.
Last time you had me on, I told you guys were the best in the business, and I really mean that. Your coverage of Bison basketball is always top-notch, and the players, the coaches, the fans, we all appreciate it.
I mean, I think you and your staff now have done an amazing job with the Bison Report. Again, I think it gives NDSU fans an outlet to go to for good football coverage, elite basketball coverage, and everything recruiting.
You know, I really appreciate you guys, Bison Report, for what you guys do for Bison football.
Here's your host and publisher of Bison Report, Ross Uglow.
What is up, Bison fans, and welcome back to 2024 is not quite right, but this is the season debut edition of Bison Report Radio. We are back. We know it has been far too long. Joining me today to preview North Dakota State's season opening trip to Colorado, one and only, number three in your program, number one in your hearts, Trevor Grebhart. Trevor, how are you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well. We're so back, Ross. We're so back. I actually watched The Hangover the other night, so we're so back. There's words in that movie, if I were to quote it, that I can't say. Or you just bleep it out.
Right. Yeah. If only if I was in the regular studio, I could do the beep thing. Rocking out of the home studio today, which is just fine. Yeah. When I got Tim to go off for 2 minutes on why it's okay to play guard at 6'7", and then for him to assault a podium, he was so excited about Bryce Lance, I knew we were back. He's got a different energy, man, and I guess we can kind of get into that right after we get through the news. Running back Barika Penu is going to be a Wednesday decision. You guys, Trev and I, are doing this on Wednesday afternoon. I think there's a really good chance you're getting this right away Thursday morning, so it can kind of help you get through the workday as you get jazzed for this NDSU Colorado matchup. Cole Wisniewski is going to miss a significant amount of time. My estimation is that'll be reevaluated around Halloween, but he may not play Bison football again as he seeks an NFL career. I think, as much as, and I'm not trying to say this selfishly, from my own understanding, and being as plugged in with the draft community as I am, I think he needs more film. I don't think the league is going to give him even a chance at safety. He's going to have to drop back down to linebacker to try and make it in the league. And I'm not saying that the Bison would even play him at linebacker, because they probably wouldn't. I think they probably too want to see him play, want to see that he can come back from whatever injury this is. I think, as much as I've loved Wiz, I always thought he was a fifth, sixth, seventh round guys that are now as old as he is going to be, that missed their entire senior seasons, that's an uphill battle. So as much as I think some of the people would say, it's best for him, just hold him out, like let him get healthy. If he can come back, he should, if he wants to continue to play pro ball. Just my two cents. All-American fullback long snapper Hunter Brosio's career is over as well. He is going to remain with the team in a leadership position. That was very important to Coach Polisek. You saw Bros retweet one of our tweets about this subject. It's clear how much Bison football means to him. Great kid, funny kid, and your heart breaks for him. But I think Tim said he was going to be like a vet or something. He's got something like already going on in his professional career. And as you honestly too, like some of these guys that aren't going to the league, You saw that with how many guys kind of were comfortable moving on with their lives during the pandemic. You get to be 23, 24 years old. Some of them get married. Some of them, going to secondary school, whether that's medical school, dental school, whatever. Not everybody's built to play 6 or 7 years of college football, even with all this extra eligibility flying around.
Most bodies aren't. It's not a non-violent sport, especially in this program.
Yes, sir. And the North Dakota State men's basketball schedule has been released. We won't have Nate on today just because this is going to be such a football-heavy show. The only high major game is going to be at Butler. And you might say high major. Butler's in the Big East, man. That's as high major as it gets. The two-time defending national champions play out of the Big East. That's high major.
Well, Butler's been to two national titles.
And yeah.
I mean, like, yeah, not much more needs to be said. Yeah.
Right. I mean, maybe I think some Bison fans would be like, ooh, Butler, because it's not Kentucky or Carolina or Iowa or whatever. It's clear to me that even though Coach Richmond's record against those teams has not been stellar, and it hasn't, it's pretty clear that that's getting harder and harder to get scheduled. I mean, it is getting more and more difficult for them to get into fog, into Iowa State, into Iowa. The Gophers obviously want nothing. They want none of the smoke and haven't for a while. Those games are getting harder to schedule, but I think really good mid-major home games with Illinois State, Northern Colorado, and Western Michigan, specifically Western Michigan and Illinois State. If you're looking for a slight move up in the mid-major world, hosting a Valley, and I don't really want them to end up in the MAC, but hosting a Valley and a MAC team in your gym, you know, I think is a big deal for the basketball program.
Didn't somebody transfer to Illinois State?
Yeah.
From NDSU?
The pride of North Dakota, Bowden Skunberg, is going to take his fifth year of eligibility at Illinois State. So that'll be quite the homecoming for Bo. In a number of ways, I think that's going to be fun. And it's going to be strange to see the gaggle of Skunbergs, wonderful people, by the way, but the gaggle of Skunbergs that I can only imagine are going to show up in the shack, you know, after 100 games of Bowden in the shack, wearing that red and white. That's going to be, as soon as I see Julie, his mom, in red and white, I don't know how I'm going to act, but that's correct. Bowden Skunberg is on the Illinois State Redbirds, but that should be fun. And like I said, Western Michigan, Western Michigan squad is returning a home and home after NDSU beat them at their place to kick off last year's season in overtime. All right, let's. I'm gonna kick this to you first.
Yep.
Any takes for you off of that initial two deep that you maybe don't see kind of on the show notes here?
Nothing really stands out to me, to be honest with you, Ross. I mean, this. I know it's probably affecting FBS more than FCS, but this. This evolving, I don't want to frame it up wrong for it to make sense for the listeners, but this evolving door of this new NIL, a new era of college athletics, like the two deeps going into a season, they're always going to be different than what they were the year before. And that almost sounds kind of dumb even saying it like that, but you're not going to know your roster full well until you get to like a week one, like now, because rosters can change and pivot very quickly with, you know, NDSU bringing in a receiver, what, in the last 3 weeks. I believe Colorado had a couple of transfers even come in or maybe out over fall camp. So to me, it's kind of like you don't really hold your breath. You just kind of see what it is. And then these are the guys you're rolling with. So these are the names that I'd be certainly looking out for to hopefully be making plays on Thursday night in this case and Saturday's moving forward. But it is encouraging to see some of the bigger names still be in there. So that is the first thing that sticks out, you know, like a Cam Miller, like a Gray Zabel, guys that certainly could have and did have opportunities to go elsewhere, but they're still Bison. So
100%. I think, you know, like you're not fighting only graduation anymore. And for so long, I mean, occasional guys would quit or, you know, very, very occasional transfer out to try and get, you know, more. I think Jabril was really the first one where people were like, oh no.
Yeah. I mean, you know what I mean? Obviously he was on a different level, but you know, like it's fun conversation because even, you know, like Brock this last weekend came down to visit. That was just a great time. And we talked about these type of things after that 2012 season, when we had won two national titles, everyone, a part of that roster was by and large sophomores and juniors. We would have gotten picked apart. And I can't sit here and lie to you that, like, nobody would have gone. I mean, Brock would have gotten offered a handsome lump sum to go play somewhere in the Big Ten, most likely.
Marcus.
I mean, everybody. Billy. Yeah. I mean, there are so many. You know? So it's one of those things like, hey, we would have accomplished what we needed to as a group. We still would have been friends forever. But it's like, hey, now we're going to go make some nice little chips while we're in college. So certainly can't blame young men. I know it's not what we always like. Change is kind of like, what's that old adage? It's like the only thing consistent in life is change. So like, it's just interesting in this new landscape, how it's being navigated, what works, what doesn't, and how things continue to shift and change and evolve, not just in the broader landscape, but in Fargo and at NDSU. And right now, I think they've done a pretty good job. Some years better than others, obviously. But you learn from it, and you just try to do what is it, roster management now, I think is what Coach B calls it.
Yeah, and I think Coach B is going to do a better job than that, than Coach Entz probably did or was going to do. And I don't – like, I have so much respect for Matt and what he did, kind of taking the torch from Chris and continuing to win and bring more national titles to the school. But I always got the vibe, always, from Coach that I think ultimately – And I know he took the USC job as a potential bridge to a bigger job as a header, and says he wants to be a header again. But Matt also to me is just like, he's a coach, man. And I get that vibe from Kleiman too. And he's obviously done tremendous things as a header, but if Matt Entz could just watch film and teach ball and not ever have to talk to people like me, not ever have to, go to the Fargo Country Club and grease up the biggest donors, right? Like if Matt never had to do that stuff, and shout out to the donors, we're not anti-donor.
Yeah.
but like if he could just do the coaching part of coaching, I think he'd be golden.
Yeah, Paul's like good in the facilities and good with the headset on Saturdays.
Right.
And then everything else is just like, this isn't why I signed up for this. I get it.
But Tim is all juice all the time. And I'm not saying Tim can't coach, because he can, but he brings it. It doesn't matter if it's if it's a Green and Gold Collective event, if it's a Bison Open out at the golf course, if he's just shooting the breeze at Shields, if he happens to be, he's a Wisconsin guy, maybe he's, grabbing a Butterburger at Culver's and some Bison fan wants to come chop it up. Like, he's ready to chop it up. He's so good at that. And I think he's also going to be good at the roster management part. We've seen at Bison Report his capabilities in recruiting. Now, a lot of it's going to be holding on, but his capabilities in recruiting, I think it's a good, fresh move to get Polisek in here for some of that roster management stuff. All right, we got to keep going. The Wiz stuff and the Brosio stuff sucks. Okay, you hate losing guys even before you play a game. Last year it happened with Zen. It's happened in the past. I'm not saying football is not a physical game. But it would be fun to get through an NDSU fall camp without a season-ending injury when you're...
It sure would, yeah. It's like when cut and paste, just insert the name.
I know. It's like when you're just playing green versus yellow, could we not get knocked out for the season? Could we find a way to avoid that? But
it's a double-edged sword. A double-edged sword, though. That double repping, it is so valuable. I mean, much as I hated it as a player, because it is a grind. I mean, it is brutal. But I tell you what, you get to that fourth quarter throughout the season, it pays dividends in ways that you don't really know why you're going. Until you go through it and experience it, you don't know what it's going to do for you. And that's kind of the trade-off, is something's going to give when you double rep like that. So, and definitely, of course, mixed feelings.
Yeah, and I don't have the player experience, obviously, that you or Willis or any of those guys do, but I think the double repping, the depth, the experience, the next man up mentality being very real, that in addition to everything that goes on with Coach Kramer, really define the dynasty. And I'm not saying the dynasty is over either, but what we know of the dynasty and one of the greatest dynasties in the history of college sports, I think the double repping and the Kramer stuff has to be super, super high on the list.
There's no doubt. Yeah.
Try to get Willis. Willis is making sauce. I tried to
well,
get
like
Willis.
He's busy, yeah. Yeah, making sauce.
Willis is making sauce. We're gonna try and talk some old line. Just some stuff I thought was interesting on the line. You know, I mentioned to Coach P, and like I said, I got him to go off for a little while. You know, they've had plankers in there at guard. I think a lot of our favorite guards in the history of NDSU football were the guys I was talking about, or maybe even shorter, you know, like Gimme, right? Really getting under guys, you know what I mean? Colville getting under guys. And that 6'3", 6'4", kind of body type that, like A-Rich, even, you know, guys that were sort of used to in that way. Whereas when you are talking about Jake Rock, I mean, Jake Rock looks like he was built in a factory to play tackle. Now,
well, he's not short, I'll tell you that.
Right. Yeah. And he's got bend that Polisek is talking about that is going to allow him kind of the natural leverage to do that. Griffin Empey, I tell you what, man, that's an underrated cool story. And we've actually, when you guys are listening to this, you will have been able to read a awesome Griffin Empey story by intern Blake, because he went and talked to Griffin this week, and we're kind of opening up the floodgates a little bit for intern Blake to work a little bit more. But I tell you what, man, like, no disrespect to Griffin Empey at all intended here. When I say he was not like at the top of our quote unquote big deal list in that class, I mean it, especially with Bo Johnson. Bo Johnson found his way onto the two deep as well. And we know the guys love Jack Lewinsky, but you look at this, just go through his social media, man. Minnesota Duluth offered in June of his upcoming senior year.
Wow.
Southwest Minnesota State, June of his upcoming senior year. Northern Michigan, Upper Iowa. Okay, and this is stuff like you know that you played with all Americans that had very similar offer lists.
Right.
In fact, I think your QB had a pretty similar offer list. Guy wore number 16, but of late that has been less the case because of the brand of NDSU and being able to get bigger time kids. Griffin Empey, I think maybe played like 8-man ball in Wisconsin. This Stoughton, Wisconsin. This is not a kid that would have ever been the one that I would have picked and say, because one of the highlights or the headlines of Blake's story on Griffin, Trev, this is the first freshman to start in the opener since Colville and Haig in 2012.
Well, that's, you know,
guys, yeah. Freshmen have made their way into the lineup due to injury, but as far as like this is our five. Not since Colville and Haig has a freshman cracked the O-line lineup.
Yeah, Joe Haig was pretty good. That's what I heard.
He was.
He was. It's cool because the program is built on guys like that. I mean, shouts to Cordell and Cody come to mind.
Just, yeah.
You know, small-town kids. So, you know, hopefully the young man develops in the way that clearly this coaching staff feels that he can put the program on his back a little bit. We'll see how it shakes out against a, you know, pretty formidable opponent.
Absolutely. No, and it's going to be trial by fire. I would assume, too, and I haven't looked that deep into – I've looked into the two deep. I've looked into some of the PFF college grades, watched a little bit of film. But it's hard because you're trying to grab film from 10,000 different schools. Like, it would be easier to watch last year's buffs, but they're not this year's buffs. And we'll talk about a little bit of that. Trev, how do you go about kind of replacing the presence of an Eli Green? You know, you've got a ton of experience. I asked him about this at the press conference. You know, a lot of theirs, and you were in a wide receiver room somewhat like this, in that one of your dudes was 5'8", you know,
right.
And there, I would say with Rajah and Braylon being kind of the leaders, if I was to build a football team, I mean, I would put both of them in the slot. You know, they would not play X for me. They would not play Z for me. They would be in the slot. But that's where your primary, you know, production is going to be, and your biggest outside threat now, you know, got that sweet bag from Iowa State.
Right. You know, I'll make it a simple answer to kind of start and then dive into it. The simple answer is you don't replace him. I mean, that guy,
we've
talked about it in the group chat. He is one of the snappiest players that we've seen. Now, he's not the athletic freak that number one was in Christian Watson, but is he snappier? In some moments, it looks like it. And so he's going to have a shot to play on Sundays. So you don't just have that happen overnight. Now, you never know how a young man could develop, and, you know, there's been plenty of Sunday players come through Fargo. The way you have to do it is you're going to have to do it with numbers. You're going to have to get creative and putting guys in positions to succeed with their skill set, because you don't just have that, hey, F it, Eli's down there somewhere type of attitude that they've been able to get away with. So guys like Bryce Lance are going to have to step up in a different way. He's not, you know, he's a different build, but he's going to have to step up to get guys out of the box. Obviously Rajon Braylon, like you already mentioned, they are both going to have to step up to equate the production that Eli provided. They don't need to all go have 100 catches. That's not what this offense is built on, but they need to have efficient production and enough to make defenses honor them when they are on the field.
100%. Yeah. Cause you can't get in a spot where teams are like, all right, we're going to go cover one and or zero and just not care. And just go box, box, box. We don't care. Your guys can't beat us in man. So we've got eight and we're even cheating the free. Like, we don't care. Run against this many bodies. We dare you. And that's where an Eli Green was so important last season and why NDSU was able to be so efficient. But I'm not willing to throw in the towel. I think, you know, we talk about Bryce, one of the bigger time recruits since I've been around is Makai Collins. Definitely waiting for that one. Silas Green, I think it is. It's Silas for sure from Colorado State. Even Ter Hark, right? He's on the two deep, sometimes two deep's a seniority thing. Chris Harris has, I've said this, Chris Harris has looked like a leaguer since the day I saw him. I mean, that kid looks unbelievable in pads and his size. He looks like an NFL player. But he earned a scholarship, so obviously he had a strong fall camp or you know, Coach P's not just giving those away. I'm interested to see what they do while still admitting happily that Eli Green was a hell of a player.
Sometimes it's by nature of opportunities too, because you got to think about guys getting scholarship offers. Does that happen if Eli doesn't leave? Who knows?
Who knows?
You know, that's not for us to say, but does it help? Absolutely. So sometimes kids just get more opportunities by nature of, hey, your quote unquote best receiver isn't there anymore. So it almost forces you to step up in a way. So that's where some of this, like, okay, a guy leaves, you're going to find out real quick if the guy sitting there waiting in the wings is just as good, hopefully, if not better. And I'm not saying that someone's going to be better than Eli, because that's a tall task.
Yeah.
You just get more opportunities to prove yourself when a guy like that does leave. So it'll be interesting to see how a number of these guys step up in various aspects of the offense.
For sure. And Jackson Williams from Omaha has been up with the non-developmental group.
Interesting.
Tim kind of said he'd like to keep it to four games and then, you know, pop him back in there during the, during the playoffs portion where it doesn't count.
Goodness.
I'm not going to call this breaking news because I would guess that somebody else has seen it or mentioned it. Jacob Kilzer, the Air Force transfer at QB, who has 4 years of eligibility left because he did not use one last year, is now wide receiver Jacob Kilzer. So
you just saw that as we're talking here?
Yeah.
Huh.
I'm in the Silas Evans, by the way, not Silas Green. I don't know where I got that. I'm in the roster. Taking a quick look, your four QBs, which is fine. And they've all burned their red shirts or, you know, you're not worrying about pulling any shirts. Cam, Cole, Trey Drake, Nathan Hayes, but and he was always kind of viewed as a super athlete. So I would not expect anything from Kilzer this year, but I know he's got a lot of athletic tools and it was highly thought of maybe at a position other than QB, kind of like in a Noah Gindorf kind of way. Like Noah Gindorf had to play QB for Crosby Ironton simply because he was just easily their best athlete, but had an immediate projection to a different position.
Well, people forget too. Ryan Smith came in as a running back.
Yeah.
People forget that.
It's true.
That's an easy one to forget. And his first spring playing receiver, it was not pretty. That fall, it was nice. So
sometimes
it just takes that year. Also, I don't want to get too sidetracked, but there's a guy that wears number 9 who's a pretty decent athlete.
Yeah, and that was part of the talk too. You know, if Panu couldn't go, and you just have TK and Marty Brown, and people are very, very, very excited about Marty Brown. Talking about kind of who that third back was going to be, and coach basically just said, like, look, we're pretty darn comfortable with, Cole Payton. If we need a third person to run the ball, nine's good. We'll be okay. So,
well, it's only been on tape. How many times? I mean,
right.
Like he can tote the rock.
Yep.
So,
yep. And Kelly Watson burned his redshirt last year. I mean, there's bodies. We'll see who gets dressed and heads to Boulder, but there are certainly bodies. So much experience and talent up front. A lot of people talking, and I'm not necessarily saying they're wrong, but you know, just a lot of discussions about NDSU's front four. I'm almost offended by that in the sense that I would much rather refer to it as a front seven. You know, of course, folks are going to be excited about Hendricks and Shaka and even what we've seen from Cole Menz, finally getting to see Hunter Zenzan. And then, I mean, my God, the embarrassment of riches at defensive tackle, Mostert, twins, Stutenheffer, yes. Heisman, which is not even to say anything of the actual like 310-pound kid, Keenan Wilson. I think folks are excited about him, but you bring back Wirtz, Kubitz, Kopp, and Oscar Benson, and what you're looking to get out of maybe a Marcus Gully, a Nathaniel Staling, and Austin Altapeter, and an Enoch Sibomana. They're going to be very deep, very old, and very experienced in the front seven,
right?
And decently athletic as well. I think that's going to be the strength of this team. Really, I do. I think that's going to be what wins and wins and loses them games is how unbelievably deep and talented they are up front. How many guys they got production. And that's an old NDSU thing too. I mean, you guys were successful early, but as you became more successful and that developed, like it was a lot of, okay, we're 22, 23 years old. We're men now. We're developed men. And there are some men. There are some 22, 23, 24-year-old men up front on defense.
Well, it's what makes this matchup intriguing, because it's not a secret that Colorado had major issues at offensive line last year. Now, the hype and the five-star tackle kid that's starting as a true freshman, I mean, there's –
yeah, we'll talk about that in a second.
When we'll get to it. But it makes it intriguing because of the type of, I'll call it star power, that is in the front for NDSU defensively. So I know I'm excited about it. There is a difference of being a fourth, fifth, sixth-year guy, whatever they are, going up against guys who are playing college football for the first time and playing with a group for the first time. It sounds dumb in saying this too, but an O-line is going to be much better gelled if they're all, you know, if it's the same front five in week four than they are week one. It just takes time.
Yeah.
And so that's why these guys haven't played a lot of snaps together, having another spring together, having another fall camp together. There's going to be things that they're going to be able to be creative in. And just by nature of knowing who you're going up against, what their strengths are, and where they're going to be able to fill gaps, even if it's not their specific assignment, that stuff matters. So, fun and exciting, is the way I view this front seven.
Yeah. I think I'm going to kind of take the scope back just a second away from the Colorado game. This, of course, a Colorado preview, but what I will say is I'm not worried about the offense. I'm actually not even worried about the offense in this game, but I'm talking from an FCS. Do you want to win a national championship? Eli Green, no Eli Green. This offensive line, this group of receivers, as good as they're going to be at tight end, and these two quarterbacks, with everything that I've heard about Marty Brown, I'm not worried. I'm not. Yeah,
the pieces are there to win a national title. Totally. 100% right. On the same page there. Yeah.
So defensively, both for this game, and this is how we'll kind of make the transition, can the new look secondary survive? And if they're waiting for Cole Wisniewski to show up on a white horse 2 weeks before the playoffs, I'm serious. Like,
yeah, I know.
You know what I mean? If he's going to pull up like around Thanksgiving, that's one thing too, but what are you getting out of this, back five, back four, whatever you want to call it. I would have liked to see more out of Marcus Shepherd last year. Apparently at fall camp, he's been tremendous. Very excited about Tony Chidame Alfaro. Everybody just calls him Tony. Probably just going to refer to him as Tony. He's got length, man. And he was good at Cornell. I know it's Ivy League ball, but he was legitimately good. And then the two guys behind them on the depth chart, Jalen Duffy and Jakees Alexander, those are high three stars. Those are dudes when you're talking about recruiting. Yeah. And then the biggest thing, man, is Ryan Jones and Sam Young back there. You know, we saw some athletic limitations with Sam last year. Very smart player, good football player. I just, him in space, especially without Wiz, especially against what they've got here in Colorado. And that's kind of how I think it's going to be a race to the QB. And look, I hope for development from Ryan Jones. I hope for Darius Givens to become that dude. I have a lot of hopes and dreams and wishes for the secondary. Right. But if that doesn't come to pass, the front seven has to dominate for this team to get to where they want to go. Truly dominate.
It's by far the biggest question mark, in my opinion, coming into this season. And as it stands right now is, you know, the secondary. The thing that is going to help them is you've got a bona fide front seven that can help make them look better because they have to cover for less time, theoretically.
Right, yeah. Yes. Oh, yeah.
Things have to – you know what I mean? So that is going to help, and then rely on your strengths. And so if that means they're going to have to get creative with stunts and maybe coming off the edge or, you know, trying to get guys in tighter spaces that aren't good in space, you might have to do some of those things. And, you know, thank goodness, you know, obviously I'm biased, but having Gio, the brother man at DC, that is the mind that you want behind this to be able to put those guys in positions to succeed. Because the one thing I do know that he's doing is simplifying the defense, getting back to just kind of bread and butter. You know what your assignment and alignment is. Just go be fast now.
And you can get away with that, by the way, when you're and not that I'm necessarily disagreeing with simplifying the offense as an idea. You can run a lot of simple stuff when your front four is nasty.
Correct.
You can run all the Legion of Boom cover three you want when you're dropping seven, or you know, you can even run a lot of the like Vic Fangio split safety looks when you don't have to bring five and six guys.
Playing to your strengths by being able to do that. You know what I mean? So, but now these guys still got to produce because you're going up against Travis Hunter. So we're going to find out very quickly on Thursday.
That's my key to this game. Can you stop Shedeur Sanders? Coach P, and I think it's probably – you know, Kittle is a multiple-time All-Pro, so that's tough. But he didn't really wreck them in Iowa. I'm fine with what he said about Shedeur being the best player they've ever played. I think that's on the menu. I think if Shedeur ends up
being that as a program, you want better. Yep. You know what I mean?
Yep. Can you stop Shedeur and Travis Hunter with this group in the secondary, or are you simply going to be out-athleted? That is the number one question for me going into this game. I think offensively, NDSU should still be able to score plenty. I think with the over-under at like 60, somebody's going to be expected to score. Like NDSU has the best chance of winning, though, if that total hits the under and if they control the football. Because if you can control the football, any turnover or punt becomes magnified by Colorado. If you're running the football and you're getting three, you're occasionally getting seven, but you're chewing up that clock. Any sack fumble, any quick three and out, or Prime gets crazy, they go for it on a fourth and three, they don't get it. Any possession of Colorado's that doesn't end in a score becomes magnified when the possessions and the total number of possessions are shrunk.
Yep. And that's what this game is going to have to be when you have guys who are simply just better athletes. It's not to knock the kids in Fargo. It's just what it is. You have to take the air out of that stadium and the ability for these athletes to get loose. The way you do that is by it's the adage of the best defense is a great offense. Just stay on the fields, convert first downs and third downs. It's kind of a weird – it's one of those weird things. Don't turn it over. It's simple, basic football. It's week one, so it's like you almost have to do these things anyway. It's almost like in this game, I'm going to be rooting for NDSU to get into third and short situations because that's extending the clock, extending the drive. I don't want a bunch of first downs right away. And then now, if you can get points, take them. I'm not saying just like purposely go down and get third and one and take 35 more seconds off.
Hook slide at the 1 yard line.
Go score the freaking football. But if it's third and under four, got to convert them. And if that continually happens, NDSU is going to be in good shape. The other big piece of this too is, especially in like these week one type games where you have matchups where it's just a lot of unknowns, special teams becomes extraordinarily magnified. Look at the Iowa game. There was that pick six early on in the game. I think MJ scored. Pierre might have made the hit. I can't remember who exactly was involved, but you know, the butterfly effect and how things change in that game. Who knows? But that's ball game right there. I mean.
Dudzik's punt return in Manhattan.
Correct. Flip the field.
Huge.
Momentum.
Huge.
So keep their superstars off the field. Get that doubt in their mind. And the best way you can do that is by throwing a gap power throat punches at them. So, and don't turn the football over because you can do that all day long and commit three turnovers and you're probably SOL.
Yeah. I'm not going to pretend to know Coach Prime's aspirations. You know, I think what he did at Jackson State was impressive. I think he certainly got Colorado on a different path than they were. I mean, I was just telling somebody the other day, but tell you what, man, when NDSU scheduled at Arizona, at Colorado, that looked like two W's, like kind of two.
At the time when they were scheduled, it looked like cakewalk layup games. I mean, they were worse than Iowa State.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, that changes, you know, with Coach Prime. I'm interested to know when Shadur and Shiloh are done, like how much interest does he have in continuing to do this? I don't know. But it's a transfer culture. You know, he talked about it right away. I'm bringing my luggage and, you know, you hear the horror stories of forcing guys out of the program, this, that, and the other. We're not going to get into all that, but there's other cultural things in the news, rumors, what have you, that it's not necessarily great versus Bison pride and the culture that has been about winning and has been about the guy next to you the entire time. And that hasn't changed with this Buffs team, which of course makes for an interesting preparation because you have no idea what these guys look like as a cohesive unit. You can't go flip on tape. They're all gone. You know, I mean, they're all gone. All those offensive linemen that stunk are gone. Dylan Edwards is at Kansas State now. Like that applies to a number of other players. For example, we're going to talk about Jordan Seaton, which is we've already talked about, or Seaton. I'm not 100% sure, but you know, five-star. I think actually the top offensive lineman in his class. Going to start at left tackle. That's crazy, but also crazy. Three of the other starters on the offensive line are transfers. So 80% of your offensive line is either a true freshman or a transfer. Everybody in their front seven outside of Trevor Woods is a transfer. And they were terrible up front, so that makes sense, right? But everybody is a transfer. And so there's new players all over the place. They're hard to scout. It's hard to understand what's going on. It's hard to even provide a great game preview because you just have no way to expect what's coming. And sometimes, though, and I think Polisic kind of hinted at this, I think that might play into NDSU's hands because I think their entire game plan leading up into this game has just been, let's go there and play Bison football. Let's do the best version of what we do because we don't know what they're going to do. So as much as we'd like to prepare, we can't. So let's just do Bison football to the best degree that we can possibly do Bison football.
Yeah, it's weird. I mean, you equate things to your own experience, but like my senior year, what RJ Erzendowski did, it was like he did not realize what he was doing while he was doing it because he was like naive.
In a certain way.
Same can apply into this situation. Like it can benefit you sometimes. So because you don't know anything, 5-star here, 4-star that, top draft pick in 2025 there. You know, Travis Hunter being the number one overall recruit a few years back. Yay. You know, you're aware of it, but like everything else that's around it has to fit well to complement that. There's 11 guys on the field at a time for each team. Those guys can only do so much. Evidence of last year, them winning 4 football games, and Shedeur Sanders is running for his life, despite him being just an incredible talent at quarterback. He can't literally will the game by himself without some sort of support. So if you've got a group of guys who have not done this together yet in Colorado, that, not to say this is going to happen, it could be problematic. Now, they could very well and just be like an all-star team thrown together, and it's like the craziest experiment we'll ever see in college football. It's probably going to be somewhere in the middle, realistically. Right. But it is fun to me. One, obviously, you got a new season, which for football junkies is the best.
Yep.
But you got so much pride in a program and building on, like, establishing a culture, and this is who we are. It's what we do. It's just who we are, like, how we live our lives. And it's just a style of play embodies that lifestyle, which is why I think the community of Fargo in North Dakota State football just it builds on itself, because the two things are cohesive. Colorado thing is like, we're just trying to get the best guy that we can possibly find in this moment, and this guy's going to leave, and I want this guy, and we'll see what happens. It's just very intriguing overall, shortage of headlines as a result.
You know, you can't get more lunch pail and blue collar than North Dakota State football, and the opposite is in Boulder right now, period. It just is.
It's Louis. It's Louis.
It's Louis. It's gold watches. There's nothing wrong with that, but I mean, it's just like the styles, the contrast here. And one thing I will say, look, I've the Wisniewski stuff sucks so bad. It does. It really does.
Right.
And I've had a lot of conversations with people in the community. Of course, people know what I do. People ask me what I think, you know, how's it going to go, whatever. There's a lot of negativity right now. I think a lot of people are scared of Travis Hunter. I think a lot of people are scared of Shedeur Sanders. And again, a lot of new players. I will say that I think NDSU fans in general do not have a great grip on just how bad Colorado was last year. I think Colorado burst on the scene. I think some of the, non-conference stuff was probably more exciting, right? What they were able to do in the non-con and getting people excited about what Coach Prime was doing. I don't think that TCU team ended up being much. Obviously, that Nebraska team was no good. Nothing super special about Colorado State. And then just getting baptized by Oregon. And then after the Oregon game, it looks like they went 1-7, right? And mm-hmm. you know, getting just cracked by Washington State. They won at Arizona State. In general, I think NDSU fans are overrating Colorado. But then again, what is Colorado? Are they that team?
Yeah, nobody knows.
Nobody knows.
It really makes it so much fun. Because
I would tell you this. I would take and Buffs fans get mad at me, whatever. This year's NDSU team would have smacked last year's Colorado team.
Yes.
I truly believe that.
Hindsight's 2020, but right. Like, yes, if we're going to do.
But this team is not that team. This team is not that team.
Correct.
Yeah. Keys to the game. Far as I'm concerned, you have to run the ball. You either need to win up front defensively or allow the ball to be caught in front of you and make the tackle. I think if I'm Gio, I'm throwing all of my single high safety stuff in the trash. Can't do it. Mm-hmm. Can't do it. And so if that means it's going to be a lot of cover two, it's going to be a lot of cover four. You better come up and tackle, and you better rally to the football, and you better limit explosives, because with no Eli Green, you're not winning a track meet. You're just not. And so the front four has to be so good. That's what I have to say. The front four has to be so good. That's going to be the key, because I just don't know that NDSU can stay in front of these guys. I'm less worried about the FCS. I am worried about these guys.
Well, you've got a guy like Travis Hunter who is an absolutely bona fide freak athlete.
First round pick, easy, either position.
We're not going to see that at the level that NDSU plays at, you know. So, you know, this is a 1 week thing. It just makes it fun to go, hey, we have an opportunity to really re-put the program on the map in a very different way, in a very unique way, just because of the hype surrounding Prime and all the names, Warren Sapp's coaching there, things like that. To me, it comes down to the blatantly obvious one. You have to run the football well. I don't want to put a number to it, but I think if they get over 350 yards rushing, they've got a really, really good shot at winning the game.
I would hope so. Yeah. And, and I tell you what, Jimmy Horn Jr. can go too.
Yeah.
Fast. Yes. He was awesome at I believe it was USF.
Yeah.
Anyway.
But outside of that, to me, it's just clean football. Like you said, it's the blocking and tackling. It's winning the turnover battle and being penalty free, because against teams that are on paper and what is more than likely going to play out, they're just simply way more athletic than you. You cannot have mistakes that are mental errors. You cannot. Every little bit matters. So it's clean football, rushing the football, and rushing the football to that extent is going to allow them to stay on the field. And it's just kind of generally how things play out. But if you don't win the turnover battle on top of that, you get penalties in crucial situations, you'll lose the football game.
And that Colorado team was prone to mistakes. All right, prediction time. I'm going to get mine out of the way because it's going to make people sad. North Dakota State 27, Colorado 34. I want to believe. I think there's going to be a reason to be proud of this team. I think they're going to cover. I think they're going to catapult themselves in a positive way towards the FCS schedule. Feel like Green was in this game, but he's not even on this team. And even if Cole Wisniewski was in this game and I felt a little bit better about keeping Colorado in the 20s, I see NDSU losing a close one. I do. I feel a little bit less confident than I did going into the Arizona game, and they lost a close one. I think they're going to lose a close one here.
Yeah, I'm very similar. The spread of what is it, 9.5 feels very appropriate. I think that's a phenomenal betting line for this game. I'm almost right on the same page as you, Ross. I have 31-26 Colorado. Fair enough. There's just too many unknowns, and the injuries do not help. Obviously, the Eli Green departure is a huge blow offensively, you know, but hopefully some of these guys can step up in ways. So we're talking about something different and admitting we're dead wrong. On Friday.
Hey, we will play the Victory Monday music on Friday. That is a promise. We will play the Victory Monday music on Friday if we get a chance. All right. Thank you, folks, for listening. No thanks to a sponsor yet. I think it might be a familiar one, but it's not signed, sealed, and delivered yet. Thank you to Trevor Gebhardt for making the time. And thanks to all of you wonderful Bison fans for listening. Have a great rest of your day, and go Bison.